Blog Talk Radio.
Hallelujah. I know it's hard right now. Because you're a winner.
You look so much better.
You look better.
Tell
us. New Orleans. You gotta have something happen. I want you to have joy, cause can't nobody take that from you. I see you. Bye.
It's Sunday and it's morning and we're live. Hi, I'm ICDRA person Lynn. Welcome to Sunday Morning Live. For show notes about today's and all of our programs, please visit SundayMorningLive.net. You can always access this show from that site, SundayMorningLive.net. So stay tuned. We've got a lot coming up for you. If you'd like to participate today, our call-in number is 619-996-1674. Make sure you stop by your Facebook page and tell your friends to listen to Sunday Morning Live.
Good morning. It's me, Isidra Person Lynn, your producer and your host, and I thank you so much for joining us this morning here on the 59th edition. Can you believe it? Next week will be 60 editions of Sunday Morning Live, so we're glad that you could be with us. Lots to talk about today. We're going to get right into it. Just to let you know, coming up later on in the show today, we are talking about content theft. We're talking about why the Internet went dark on Wednesday, and Jackie Penn produced that segment of the show, so we'll be hearing from him, and a debate with him and Hannibal Taboo, who you heard say the reason why he plays music on the Internet on his Music Mondays on Complicated.com, Complicated with a K, so we'll get to that, and we have other guests who Jackie will introduce, and then. But right now, we will talk directly to Darlene Dunlow, who is standing by somewhere on this green earth. Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning, Isidra. How are you?
I'm fine, and I know you have a lot on your plate this morning. So, before you get started, any initial reviews or word about how well or how not well Red Tails is doing?
Well, let me say this. The big story all week, actually for the last month, has been Red Tails. And, I did a slight review, talked about it last week. And I want everyone, it still counts today if you go. So don't think, okay, Friday, Saturday, it's over. You can still go today, and it still counts kind of, sort of, towards the weekend. But I had predicted that Red Tails was going to make about $20 million, and I thought it would at least come in the top three. Well, according to Box Office Mojo, Red Tails came in second, which I think is fabulous. It came in at $19,100,000.
Wow. Okay. I'm glad. Yeah, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it came in behind Underworld Awakening, which, I thought that was going to do well anyway. But $19 million, I think, is very respectable. I think that people really showed George Lucas that they wanted to support him this weekend. So I'm just happy. $19 million is great. It came in second behind Underworld Awakening. Third was Contraband. Fourth was that Tom Hanks movie, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Then there's a movie called Haywire that came in fifth. Beauty and the Beast came in sixth. Joyful Noise with Queen Latifah came in seventh. Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible came in eighth. Sherlock Holmes is ninth. And tenth is The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
That's
so
cool.
I'm very happy. I am very happy for Red Tails this morning.
Reviews have not been good. They haven't been the best.
Exactly. But this is what, that's why when you had asked me why I wouldn't give it an excellent, because I didn't think it was an excellent film. What I like is the story.
Right.
I like
and
the
that's
story.
Why people...
And, yeah, and that's pretty much why people are supporting it, because, you know, it's very rare that people have a feel-good movie about something that's historical and factual at the same time. So this is a feel-good movie for people because, you know, at the end we win. In other words, you know, because...
You know, where's the time going? Look at the time. Okay, we have an interview with Michael B. Jordan coming up right after you this morning. So, and before we even get to our debate or our discussion about how to solve the problem of online downloading, piracy, and all that on the Internet. So you said that it's time for the Image Awards already?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And before I even say that, on Tuesday I'm going to go to the announcement for the Academy Awards, and I have to be there at 4:30 in the morning, so y'all pray for me.
Okay, I'll pray for you.
Yeah, the announcements are at 5, but you have to be there and in place at 4:30, so that means
wow.
I have to get up at 3:30, so everybody pray for me.
Okay.
But yes, the 43rd Image Awards nominations were announced. They were announced by Vanessa Williams, Tracy Ellis Ross, Craig Robinson, and Courtney Reynolds. And they will air live on Friday, February 17th from 8 to 10 on NBC. The Image Awards left Fox because, you know, it's been on Fox for like, I don't know how long, maybe 20 years. They went back to NBC when their contract ran out. The Help received 8 nominations. And I'm just going to do this quickly because, you know, there's way too many nominations to go through all of them.
Yeah, because we only have it left. So, okay, go ahead.
We have how much left?
About a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, then the big story was The Help got 8. In the television category, things like The Game, Read Between the Lines, Tyler Perry's House of Pain, for Outstanding Actor, Dule Hill got a nod for Psych, for Outstanding Actress in a Comedy Series, Tatiana Ali, Tia Mowry, Tracy Ellis Ross, Vanessa Williams, and Wendy Raquel Robinson got it for The Game. Craig, you know, if people want a full listing, you can go to my blog. The blog is Donlow's Lowdown.
It's B-O-N-L-O-S.
Yeah, lowdown.
Mm-hmm.
blogspot.com. And there's a full listing of all the nominees because it's way too many to go over. Here on the show. Yeah, way too
I heard
late.
It was February
anyway, 7th.
Live. It'll be February 17th.
Yes, live. 8 to 10 on NBC. Y'all, not Fox. It's going to be on NBC. They went back. So
okay.
That's interesting to me. But,
it is.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, of course, we heard Etta James passed away this week as well. John is who discovered her. So, wow, isn't that something?
Yes. Yes, everyone knew it was coming, but it still kind of hits you in the stomach when someone actually dies like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially someone who was as beloved as Etta, so, you know, I'm sure she's resting in peace. God bless her.
Well, as we say farewell, I know you have a big event coming up this week on Tuesday.
Yes. Yes. And before I forget, tonight is the opening of A Raisin in the Sun at the Kirk Douglas Theater.
Okay.
If you're in L.A., I don't know if there are any tickets left for opening tonight, but it's opening tonight at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City. It is, you know, it's directed by Felicia Rashad. So if you're in Los Angeles and you need something to do tonight at 6:30 at the Kirk Douglas Theater, go see A Raisin in the Sun.
And then it's Tuesday you're going to see Cirque du Soleil or whatever, however you say
yeah,
it. We got to go. But what
girl,
is it?
Okay, just quickly, Michael Jackson, the Immortal. No, it's just Michael Jackson, Immortal. I'm going to go see that, so I'll have a review of that for next Sunday. I'm going Tuesday night.
Well, it looks like a lot of fun, so I can't wait till next week till we can talk with more leisurely time. But thank you so much, Darlene Dunlow, and good luck getting up at 4:30. We'll be praying. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. So that's Darlene Dunlow with the Entertainment Report Weekly, and we're going to go right into our interview with Michael Jordan. And don't forget, after that will be the debate or the discussion about online piracy. So let's get right to that.
This is Latavia Collins, and you're listening to Sunday Morning Live.
Thanks for tuning in to Sunday Morning Live. I'm Isidra Person-Lynn, your producer and host. And with me for this segment, we have a family friend, the son of a longtime friend, Donna Jordan and Tony Jordan. I mean, well, we call him Tony Jordan, but his name is Michael Jordan. And I'll never forget one day, they're friends from New Jersey. I'm from New Jersey. And but although I met them here in the Southland, but one day I was visiting the house in Newark, New Jersey, and I had to call a friend of mine because I was going to hook up with her. And she called back, and she was so excited. She thought Michael Jordan was calling her because it came up on the caller ID.
That's
So we have with us Michael B. Jordan, the son of Donna and Tony Jordan. Good morning, and thanks for joining us here at Sunday Morning Live.
Good morning, everybody. How you guys doing? I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
He is an actor, and he has been one of the most blessed actors that I know. He has been in everything from All My Children, The Wire, Friday Night Lights, Parenthood. He's in this hot new movie, Red Tails, and he has another movie coming out February 3rd in just a few weeks. Actually, yeah, real short here now. It's called Chronicle. I don't know if you've seen those trailers, but they are excellent. And then he'll be on House. So that's a lot, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, I've definitely been blessed. I definitely realize that I've definitely been quite fortunate when it comes to, like, you know, working in this industry where African American actors don't really, you know, it's hard, you know, to actually work and have credible roles, you know, instead of like playing mostly stereotypes. So I've had a, you know, some really really big opportunities to work with some, you know, veterans, you know, in the acting in the entertainment industry, as far as like, you know, George Lucas and you know, Cuba Gooding Jr., Terrence Howard, you know, Lauren Graham, Monica Potter, Peter Krause, Craig T. Nelson. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
It's definitely been a blessing. And, yeah.
And one thing, you're on the cover. You're on the inside cover of this month's Ebony magazine.
Yes, that was a surprise. I, you know, when they first, you know, when we got the call that we were doing the cover of Ebony, and it was, I mean, you know, growing up, that's all Mom, you know, and Dad, you know, mm-hmm. Ebony, Jet, you know, you had the Vibe, you know, all the, you know, Black magazines, mm-hmm. you know, we had them all out the house. So for me to finally be on the cover of one of those was just, it was humbling.
And you're front and center too. You're not in the background. You're right there.
I can dress a little bit. You know? Front, they put me up front, which is kind of cool.
So tell us, now we know you're from, well, you were born in Newark, New Jersey?
No, I was born in Santa Ana, California. I was
oh,
born
right.
in Orange County. I'm, you know, officially a Cali native.
Uh-huh.
But I moved to New Jersey when I was 2 years old. My dad and, you know, Mom, Donna and, you know, Tony, they moved back east, you know, to, you know, raise a family. My sister and Khalid, my little brother Khalid. And, I know ever since I came, you know, out here to visit some family, because, you know, my dad, my aunts live out here in California. So I used to come out here during summer vacations and visit my aunt and, you know, uncles and my cousins and whatnot. And ever since then, I've always had, I don't know, I've always wanted to move back to California. I never knew I was going to be an actor. Never knew this was the profession I was going to be in. It's just, it was something about the sun and, you know, the beach and just being, just the West Coast living. And just, it was always intriguing to me. And I always wanted to move back. So as soon as I had the opportunity to, once I graduated high school, I just did. And I moved back out here and, you know, just continued this whole acting thing, you know, full force.
But you had already been acting when you came back, right?
Yeah, I started acting when I was 11 or 12 years old in New York. My mom got a Backstage newspaper, which is a, you know, an actor's newspaper,
mm-hmm.
and we randomly picked a manager that was having open calls, like literally randomly flipping through the magazine and just like said, that one, that sounds good. And we went over to this, we called up, set an appointment, went over to the city. I auditioned for a cold red, like a commercial, you know, piece, you know, for like, I think it was, I want to say it was like Oreo cookies or something like that. And she signed me that day. The next day I went out on a go-see for like a Toys R Us print ad. I booked it. And, you know, that was that, and the rest is history. It was a snowball effect from there. It was just from, you know, doing extra work, background work. You know, I did all the low-down, dirty acting job. I started from the bottom of the bottom and just worked my way up. As a kid, you don't really realize what you're doing. You're just kind of going along with it. Okay, this is fun. Oh, I get the I get to skip school today. Oh, this is awesome. Oh, man, this is great. I get free chips all day. Get free Oreo cookies. This is amazing. Okay, let's do this. And then it slowly, you know, started to, you know, make sense. And I became more and more comfortable with what I was doing. And, you know, like with any kid, you like doing what you're good at. And, you know, when you get small rewards on that level, you just want to continue to do it. And it just grew and grew and grew.
Now, I know you played the role of a football player in Friday Night Lights, but your brother's actually the football player in the family.
I'm so proud of that big dude. He's humongous. It blows my mind sometimes to realize that we had the same mom and the same dad.
I know, huh?
He's 6'6", 300 pounds.
Wow.
You know, he's the offensive tackle for Howard University.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And we're extremely proud of him. He's come a long way. And I'm definitely proud of him.
But I hear in real life, though, that you were a basketball player, and you still play basketball.
Yeah, I still hoop. I still play basketball. It's a hobby of mine.
Mm-hmm.
With the name Michael Jordan growing up, it was kind of hard not to, like, to avoid basketball. And, you know, kids are cruel. I mean, they always want to, you know, you think you can play basketball because you're Michael Jordan. So that was definitely motivation for me to, like, get good and get, you know, and be better than most. And I like to think that I'm pretty competitive. And I compete definitely on pretty much any level of basketball. I ain't going to say I play the NBA or anything like that. But I definitely play basketball a lot.
And you actually do a lot of charity basketball, or more like a traveling league?
We play in, like, you know, some celebrity basketball leagues. It's, you know, the NBA Entertainment League. Well, it's not the NBA Entertainment League anymore. It's the E League, and the Entertainment League out here in California that I play in. The Drew League. I play in, you know, a couple. I mean, I play in, you know, some pretty legit basketball leagues out here. Charity basketball games for sure. You know, if there's a game in, like, Kansas City, I go to a lot. Back in New Jersey, I go to. I used to go to one in Miami. So, you know, I like to play where I can. You know, it's more of a hobby now, but, you know, I still like to play basketball.
Keeps you in shape. And two of the things I have to say, I want to congratulate you, because, Michael, since you started coming, remember you were doing Crime Scene Miami, and I had to drive you in the middle of the night over to the place down there to get and all of that.
Wait, huh?
You never, as far as I could tell, I've never seen you in the news acting up,
nah,
doing the Britney Spears, none of that. I mean, you have been, and not only that, you have chosen some excellent projects. I mean, Friday Night Lights is just riveting. I downloaded it to my iPhone and watched it on, like, 4 days straight before I realized you're supposed to be on Wi-Fi. My bill went through the roof. But it's an excellent show, as was Parenthood. And this we have to talk about Red Tails. So here you are in Red Tails, and all I know is you went over to, where were you, in Yugoslavia?
We went to actually Yugoslavia to Croatia now. It's, you know, it's no longer Yugoslavia. It's Croatia. But, no, we shot majority of the film in Czech Republic, in Prague. And, yeah, man, it was an incredible experience. It was my first movie that I've ever really done, you know, that major scale. You know, you're dealing with George Lucas and, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, it was definitely a big deal. It was definitely a big deal. I had a great experience.
One of the things that George Lucas says is the reason it took him so long to do this movie was because Hollywood did not think that a movie with an all-black cast would do well overseas. Now, from your experience being in Prague and all that, do you think that this movie could do well?
I think it has to do well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a film where, you know, a majority African American cast, you know, certain African American, you know, all majority black films, sometimes they don't do well in the box office, and, you know, studios, it is scared the studios away from, you know, really, I guess, you know, getting behind them and pushing them as much as they want. But overseas, I think, definitely, it's a part of history. You know, it's something that has definitely happened, you know, and exists, you know, and people, you know, they need to know about it. A lot of people don't know about the Tuskegee Airmen story. You know, I wasn't, you know, taught it in high school. If I didn't have parents, like, you know, my mom and my father, I wouldn't, I mean, I would have to go out on my own and read up on it. I would have to go and research it myself. Like, there was no history class that taught about the Tuskegee Airmen when I was growing up.
Right.
So a lot of people aren't really familiar with it. So I think it's a story that definitely needs to be, you know, the light definitely needs to be shown on it and be proud of our history. You know, the few moments in our history that we can identify with and that we know of that puts us in a great light, you know, we should be proud of and own up to it. And that's kind of how I feel about the project. You know, I felt like I was working with a modern day, you know, living rock stars like Dr. Bosco Brown. These guys are amazing. They're legends. And very lucky to portray those characters.
Well, you're all throughout the film. You've gotten a chance to see it a number of times by now, I'm sure. What do you think?
I think it's a cool movie. I like it. It's, I think it's so much history to Tuskegee Airmen. It's hard to cram everything in a 2-hour movie. You know,
yeah.
The hard part is about the storytelling. It's you have to, you know, there's so much that you want to cram in, but at the end of the day, you have to have a story that flows. You have to have a story that accentuates everything that draws all different demographics into the film. So I think it was a balancing act that George did. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that it took so long to get made, because, you know, you have to find the right director, the right writer, the right actors, the right everything to kind of, like, you know, to make this thing work. And I think George did a good job. You know, I think that people are going to be definitely interested in seeing this movie.
Well, I hope in the sequels we get some black women in there somehow, kind of way.
Yeah,
put us in there somewhere. But listen, now I'm really excited about the next movie. And by the way, this, we are pre-taping this. This will air on Sunday, so Michael's very busy. So I had to get him when I could get him. We saw the screening on, what was last night? Tuesday night, I guess.
Tuesday night. Yes.
And so today's Wednesday, and so when we say, you know, yesterday and today, we're not talking about Sunday, Monday. The point is, this is still the weekend, though, that you must go buy your ticket and help support this movie. Now, Michael. I found this phenomenon out this morning while I was doing my research. The movie that you're coming up with in Chronicle, which opens February 3rd, it's a sci-fi thriller. I can't wait to see this movie. But when I go and see the trailer for that movie, it had like 7.3 million views on YouTube.
Yeah, it's been, a lot of people are very curious to see what it was about, because when we leaked out the trailer, nobody really knows exactly what it is. You know, there's not a lot. It's one of those, it's not really, it's in the vein of a found footage movie, but it's not really a found footage film. And it's, you know, it's been getting this buzz on the internet. You know, a lot of people are talking about it, which
it is
what we want. And, you know, now that we've been, you know, showing the trailer a lot more online and during, you know, football, you know, the playoffs and stuff like that, a lot of people they're very curious. Like, they're like, what is that? Oh, my God, I got to see it. It's intriguing. It's interesting.
But think about this now.
What?
That one, 7.3 million views on YouTube. When I saw one for Red Tails, and I only saw 2 million views. That's almost 3 times. And there's no buzz. You talk about buzz. Red Tails has buzz.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's funny. I mean, you never know sometimes, you know, how people are going to get, you know, or, you know, what movies draw who in, you know, what crowd in. You just sometimes just, you never know. And then, like, something with superpowers, you know, nowadays with, like, all the Marvel comic books and the superhero movies and, like, this day and age of, like, you know, of having superpowers, I think it's, you know, we have a lot of fans. Comic-Con, you know, comic fans.
Ooh,
are,
yes.
They're deep in numbers, and they support, you know, sci-fi films, and I think this is one that they're going to get behind, and I think they're really going to enjoy.
I saw a clip of you at Comic-Con. I guess it was in New York?
Yeah, Comic-Con, New York.
And you were having a good time there. But, okay, so in Red Tails, you play Maurice. Who do you play in Chronicle?
I play Steve Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a student class president. Very likable, cool guy. You know, he gets along with everybody for the most part. He has these gifts that him and his two friends they get, and without giving away too much, because the movie, it's not a what happened next film. You know, you really care about these characters, and you really kind of go into their lives a little bit and realize, you know, you care about them throughout the film, and you want to know what happens to them. So it's you know, it comes this great, you know, this familiar struggle with great power comes great responsibility, you know, and what you do with the gifts that you have. And it's kind of like that balancing between, you know, right and wrong, you know, good and evil. And it's, yeah, I think people are going to like it. I can't give away too much, but yeah. I definitely say go out and see it, and you'll be pleasantly surprised with what you see.
I don't think you have to worry about giving away too much. There's a page on Facebook, and they have like 4 different clips there, and you still don't know what's going to happen. You need to go. It's Chronicle, Chronicle, the page on Facebook, and they have like a series of clips so you can just click through and see what he's talking about. But there's only 3 stars, main people in that, and you're one of them. So that's huge, Michael.
It is, man. Yeah, I'm excited. It's been a long time coming. You know, I've been doing this for, 13 years? 12, 13 years? Long time. And to finally see, like, all the hard work paying off and, you know, going from stepping stone to stepping stone and now, you know, being on the big screen, that's something I always wanted to do. And to do it with 2 movies coming out back-to-back, it's it's a humbling, very, very surreal feeling. So I'm just riding the wave, man, and just enjoying every day.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 24.
Woo, 24. Okay.
24. Yeah.
Not just that. You have a house episode coming up. Do you know when that'll be?
It's sometime in February, I believe. Not to, you know, give. I don't want to tell you guys the wrong thing, but I want to say it's coming out in February as well, somewhere in between mid-February, and that was a lot of fun. You know, Fox is, you know, it's a great network. You know, they have great writers. John Kelly wrote the episode. Tim directed it. It was incredible episode. Playing a blind patient, which is kind of one of my more challenging roles that I've had a chance to play, and that's one of the reasons why I really jumped at it. I don't know, like nowadays you just want to find material, find characters that challenge you, you know, and that are fun to play. And when you're working with actors, you know, such as like, you know, Odette and Jesse from House, they raise the bar, you know, they make it fun, you know, and this is what the profession is all about, acting, going in, you wear different hats and you work with other talented people and you hope to, you know, to get something special. And I hope you guys enjoy it.
Now, what didn't I ask you that you want people to know about Michael B. Jordan?
I don't know. You know, I'm a kid from the East Coast that's just, you know, following his dream. You know, he's always, that's it, man. I'm pretty down to earth. I'm pretty, you know, I'm straightforward. I don't really hide too much.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm good.
You are good, and you've been blessed because I see you some places when you first started out. So many people have come here and their dreams have been dashed and they're working in ways that they don't want to do it. And you're still working. This is how you support yourself, right? This
yes,
is
ma'am.
Your day job.
This is my day, night, all job. This is my job. Well, actually, I've actually had one job in my life, I think, that wasn't acting. And it came during a drought out here in L.A. when I first moved out, the writer's strike. And all that stuff, and I had to tow cars. I was towing cars out in the valley, you know, from like 10 o'clock at night to 5 in the morning.
Wow.
And no, I mean, I think it's the first time I've ever even mentioned this. I don't even think I've ever told anybody that. That was my first, like, and only job. And I did it for, like, maybe, like, a month, maybe. I couldn't keep up with it. It was just too much. And then, other than that, you know, acting has definitely been, this has been...
Your bread and butter.
It's been my bread and butter.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
I think what's for you is for you. Can't nobody take it away from you. So I'm obviously doing something right. So
you are. And I still have respect for a man who would do a tow truck job. There's a lot of respect in that. And rather than, you know, become dependent on somebody, you pay your bills, you know?
Exactly.
So, okay. Let me go ahead and... just tell you, I wish you all the best. I pray for you,
thank you
and your family, and I thank you for inviting us to the family and friends. That was such an honor to be there and to meet your family from the Jordan side and all.
Yep.
Well, I'd like to thank your sister Jamila for inviting us last night and coordinating all of that. We didn't say her name earlier, but we hope we're going to make this Red Tails have wings, and that'll just, you know, you'll get the sequel and all the other things coming up. So, and best wishes to you on Chronicle as well. Okay.
So quick, I says hello.
I will. will, I will. And you're going to very soon. Take good care. Michael B. Jordan and Red Tails and Chronicle with Joe Pinto.
It'll bring you out the darkness.
Care. Bye.
Sweet King Martin. Sweet Queen Coretta. Sweet Brother Malcolm. Sweet Queen Betty. Sweet Mother Mary. Sweet Father Joseph. Sweet Jesus. Made it in America, sweet baby Jesus.
You're listening to Sunday Morning Live, right here on Blog Talk Radio, live from Los Angeles.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Live. I'm Isidra Person Lynn, and now is the time for us to talk about the thing that you might have been noticing on the internet this week, especially on Wednesday. If you went to websites and you found out they were dark, or their logos were blacked out, or it said censored, that is all behind this phenomenon called internet or piracy, online piracy, and the fight against it. But is the fight appropriate? So there are people who are fighting against the way the fight is going, and others who are suffering from online downloading. Jackie Penn has been really up in arms about this issue, and he so much so that he put together today's program. So I'm going to respectfully turn it over to Jackie Penn. You might remember him a few shows back. He was a guest on when we talked about blacks and Asians. But now, as an actor, he's very concerned about this whole business of online piracy. And I believe Tuesday something big is coming up. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, and thank you for having me, Sadra.
Well, thank you.
Really appreciate this.
So you got it.
So what my position is initially I was I'm fighting online illegal downloading of content, be it music, be it movies, be it information. And that's the perspective I'm coming from. However, lately there's been an avalanche of information that's been dropped on me about the bills themselves, SOPA, Stop Online Piracy, and PIPA, Intellectual Property.
Protect IP.
Yes. Thank you. And the far reaches of that. Now, I am still researching to find out as much as I can about that, but it seems to reach a little, well, people's perception is that it's reaching further than simple online downloading from illegal sites. But I still am pushing the legislation to be passed to reduce the battle to fight on illegal online downloading.
Okay.
It's wrong. It is theft.
Okay. So what we've done, because we were not able to do this on Sunday morning, but this voice is very important to the conversation. He's our regular voice you hear every week on Sunday Morning Live. We have with us Hannibal Tabu. Good morning, Hannibal.
Good morning.
And as you know, we always tell you about his website, which is complicated.com, which starts with a K. And on Mondays, he has Music Monday, where you can download music that he has gotten from artists who posted it. And we asked him, when Jackie heard it, we asked him, he said, well, how is it that you get to post his music or whatever? And he says, well, we're just linking to places where the music is posted. So that kind of set Jackie into into this whole mode. And so let me let the two of you go ahead and have the conversation about what Hannibal's position is. Or maybe I should just ask you, Hannibal, what is your position?
Well, my position very clearly is three words: evolve or die.
Hmm.
You simply cannot fight the future, and there's no way that it has ever been successful fighting the future. The industries that are beleaguered are indeed beleaguered based on a bad economy, changing technological situations, yada, yada, yada. But that's not something you can legislate against. That's not, you can't fight the wind, you can't fight gravity. And moreover, trying to do so takes resources and time away from retooling yourself and reinventing yourself into something that can accomplish something. So my full overall position in all things, when I'm talking to my kids, when I'm talking to people about intellectual property, evolve or die.
And I totally support that. There's no argument there. I am with that. My issue, again, is the illegal downloading. And maybe you can explain to us how providing those filtered sites that you provide to artists' work promotes the artists.
Oh, I'll be happy to.
Thank you.
I did an interview several years ago with Michael Franti, who used to be with Disposable Heroes of Hip Hop. Hypocrisy was spearhead, and now he's a solo artist. He had to deal with Capitol Records, and we were interviewed. I was interviewing him in the Capitol Records building, and he says, "I've been. This is my third major label record that you're interviewing me about, and I have made virtually no money from any of those things. The records serve solely as an advertisement for my shows, for merchandising, for other things that I do. If I relied on the record to make me money, I would be bankrupt." And then we laughed about Toni Braxton and TLC at the time. Also, I have had some acquaintance with Questlove from The Roots, which is a group, a hip-hop group out of Philadelphia. They used to tour 10 months a year because despite the fact that they had a huge discography of amazing records, that won't pay the bills. It simply won't. Not because of piracy or anything else, but because the accounting practices and the issues of recouping things and how long money is held in a kind of proxy state simply would not work for them. So how I am helping is that, in the words of one of my former mentors, publicist Regina Jones, she told me all publicity is good publicity as long as they spell your name right. And if somebody, for example, downloads, let's think of something I did recently, the new Anthony Hamilton record, which is awesome. That was available, the entire album, probably about a month ago online for free. If someone downloads that and they really believe in Anthony Hamilton, then they might say, huh, I wonder if he's got any more records. And they might go back and get Coming From Where I'm From and some other things that are not available for free download as easily, so they would have to go purchase those. Likewise, if someone sees that Anthony Hamilton is playing in their town, ooh, I love his record. I should definitely go to see his show. And then they can go give that money directly to him without any of the secondary or third-party issues that come through trying to deal with a record company. And as someone who's worked in content distribution and entertainment journalism for more than 20 years, if the question comes to trust the RIAA and trust the MPAA over trusting individuals, I'm going to say shut them down, same way as Anonymous would.
Okay, well, my question, and excuse me for not knowing, but how do the public support Anthony Hamilton directly?
Well, what, again, artists predominantly in music, they predominantly make money not through their record contract because, for example, let's say a record is on sale at, who's still open, at FYE for $16, right? Of that $16, the average artist deal means that they would get somewhere in the neighborhood of between 70 cents and $1.30, right? Mm. Now, let's not even focus on where the rest of that $16 goes. Let's not do that because that'll just make us angry right now. Once that money comes through, that money has to go into account that goes into escrow, because before the artist can get it, they have to recoup all the money that the label paid on designing the CD, on printing the CDs, on shipping the CDs, on making sure that they were in stores, on advertising, on tour support, on yada, 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 yada. So all of those people have to be paid out of the artist's money before they can get any of it back. That's the first and most important thing. On the other hand, if Anthony Hamilton is playing at the Gibson Amphitheater here in Los Angeles, and I go and buy a $30 ticket, of that, about $16 of that goes directly to him. And there's no middleman, and there's nobody to take a piece of it before he gets to it.
Okay.
That's how the record industry works.
Okay. Is it the same for rap artists?
It's the same for every jazz, rap, alternative. Fall Out Boy has the same deal. There's no question.
Okay. Okay, well, now that brings light to a situation that I never knew of before. I am not a musical artist, so I don't know how that works, but I can understand that. However, still, the other side of the coin, for the person that downloaded the album already without having a conscience, may not want to go back and look through for further more Anthony Hamilton library and content and just be happy with the album that they have that they otherwise would have needed to pay for if it had not been available.
Okay. And in the same way that when I was 16 years old, I stole a Run DMC record from whatever was open at the time. I don't remember what those stores were. I didn't pay for it. Run DMC has never seen a cent from it. And that's just the way it is. The people who are going to steal are going to steal, whether there's technology or not. There is no way to fight that, because if people do not have the financial wherewithal, or if in and iTunes fights against this, if it is not easier to buy it than it is to steal it, then theft will happen. It is a crime of opportunity, and it is a crime that is extraordinarily prevalent. Some people say that prostitution is the world's oldest oldest profession, but I would make an argument for theft. In that mind state, it's possible you can't monetize everybody who listens to the music. It just can't be done. Radio can't do it. You know, MTV can't do it. BET can't do it. Nobody can. What happens is the best you can do is you can monetize the people who are interested in further exploring something. So if I'm interested in, if I see Iron Man 2, I'm like, oh, what happened in Iron Man 1? And if I find it on iTunes for, I don't know, however much iTunes sells movies for, $2 or whatever, and that's easier than waiting the 7 hours it would take to download the torrent, guess what, I'll do it.
Okay, well, you present some very difficult cases to argue against, but what I think that's why you're here, right? Okay, but a lot of people think that this is an innocent crime, that nobody is being hurt by this, and that it's okay, when in fact it is theft. And my intention is to educate people, to let them know that it is not a victimless crime where nobody gets hurt and nobody's going to miss it. True, I believe that the artist should be compensated for their work, and not so much a producer or record company that's behind it taking all the profits. Maybe there need to be a better accounting system so that the artist is more fairly compensated for their work. And I'm sure that's not your battle, your fight, nor the conversation here. But I want to inform and educate the public about illegal downloading from downloading sites and what it does to the artist. Now, I'm going to move into the movie business, where there are numbers that are staggering about the reduction in production and the number of movies that are being made recently since a lot of the online download sites have become available. There are movies that are being sold on the street before they're released in theaters, and theater participation is down, even though it's an inferior quality copy that people are getting. The numbers at the theaters are reported to be down, and production is definitely down. California really cannot afford that. But the artists themselves and the people that expect money from DVD sales or online broadcasting through the pay cable stations and whatever other avenues that are available out there are just not seeing it, because it's not there. People are not buying it when they can get it for free at these torrent and other sites where they're downloadable before they're released. That's the kind of stuff that really needs to be fought against.
All right, well,
I said to get hurt.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Independent filmmakers. I'm sorry, please.
All right, well, thank you for allowing me. I didn't want to step on your toes there. I want to let you finish. First of all, at least most of it, I mean, I grew up in Memphis in the Southern Baptist tradition. I learned that theft is wrong. The difference is that most of us watch television, and we realize we live in a kleptocracy, that theft, while being wrong, isn't necessarily something that you should worry about. Because if it can happen for, Mitt Romney paying a 15% tax rate, whereas I, as a father of two and a person who works, pay a 34% tax rate, then it doesn't seem so reliable to people. Likewise, the idea of stealing something doesn't seem to hurt anybody they care about. I would point to an article from LAObserve.com called "Why Hollywood is Losing the Anti-Piracy War." They quoted an article from The Hollywood Reporter, which said, "The issue of piracy has suddenly become a zero-sum equation. If films and TV shows are still being created, there's really no problem. Nothing to see here. Move on. Hollywood has contributed to this sentiment with overreaching statements about piracy obliterating the creative industry. And to be sure, the tech industry deserves some scorn as well for their own overreactions that intellectual property laws mean the wholesale blacking out of speech and progress." To continue, Forbes said, "If Hollywood is going to make any inroads in the PR war, the town will need to come up with a compelling reason why the average viewer should care whether piracy costs a few below-the-line workers their jobs. Hollywood is great at spinning a story, but this time the town stumbled." Moreover, and this will be my final point on this, You sent out a video that had a number of creatives, including an actor and some filmmakers, talking about the challenges that they faced and the financial struggles that they faced in that regard, with piracy cutting into their bottom line. One of my good friends, her husband is a carpenter, and he's been a carpenter most of his adult life. He's a white guy who grew up in the United States, and he is getting priced out of the business left and right by people moving in this country from other places who charge less for similar grade work. I used to be a web designer. I designed websites for upwards of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 at a time. I got priced out of the business when IBM said they could build a website for $500. These things happen. The economy has changed. The realities have changed. These jobs, like manufacturing, like many other things, may be either going, not coming back, or changing forever. Therefore, evolve or die.
Okay, point very well made, and I strongly agree with that. I mean, we don't use a mimeograph anymore to make copies. We've evolved far beyond that. The DVD information that I sent to you, Creative America, the big problem, or the big picture, I'm sorry, is where I get a lot of my information from, in addition to reading a lot of articles, especially in the last couple of days, on the subject. The part about the zero production is down in Los Angeles, and that could be for a lot of reasons.
A whole lot in addition
to piracy, yes. It's less expensive to film in some other places, you know, and I have to say that that has to be a part of it, and things need to be done to bring production back in a big way. But additionally, when we see people, well, here's an example that maybe many of us have seen in the garment district. You don't have to go all the way to the garment district to see numerous copies of DVDs laid out on the street ready for sale, of which you know that they're not legitimate. But, I mean, and out there in the open, and nothing's being done about it. Occasionally, yes, an officer will come by, clean it up, and two blocks down, there's someone else set up to do it again. And I can't say that it's not hurting the business. And I do think that it's important enough to address, and to address vigorously, especially considering what movie industry contributes to California economy. That being reduced, then the pressure falls on the individual citizen and their tax payments to make up that deficit. I am against illegal online downloading. If you could download it legally, where people get their proper, their proper rewards for their efforts, then I totally support that. And I'm pushing movies because I'm in that industry, but I've also had to take a look at myself and say, wait a minute, I can't talk about pushing this issue just for movies and music if I don't apply it to information, software, and everything else. So I am speaking across the board about content in whatever form that it exists.
Okay, let me ask a question. I got to throw it down. By the way, you are listening to Sunday Morning Live, and our guests are Hannibal Taboo, and the voice you just heard was Jackie Penn, and they are debating this whole issue that really came to the fore this past Wednesday. I mean, it's been percolating for a while, but on Wednesday you saw a major effort being staged against this. It's called SEPA and PIPA, right? SOPA and PIPA. Okay, so who wants to take what those are, just briefly, to just tell us what they are and whether or not they actually have the teeth? Because it seems to me that they may be taking away rights without actually doing anything about the illegal downloading. So
well,
who wants?
I can take.
I'll let
Would you
take
like
it,
to?
Hannibal, but no. But I just want to make this comment. Of those two acts, legislative acts, I have not yet found them printed in their original form anywhere, but I'm getting a lot of opposition from it, from people with no reference to what it actually states in the document. And it sounds a lot like to me that somebody has, it's like the shouting fire in a crowded theater. Someone has shouted fire and everybody reacts to it while there is no fire. There may be the wording that people are objecting to directly in the in the acts themselves, and I'm still searching that out.
I've seen it. It's there.
Okay,
yeah,
then
I
need to do more homework because I haven't found it yet. Okay, Hannibal, please.
Okay. The Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protect Intellectual Property Act, which are both put forth by Representative Lamar Smith, a Texas politician, are the concern behind them is the possibility for abuse. And the first example of this I would put is the instance of mega uploads. Today, United States forces worked, I wouldn't say necessarily in conjunction, in that they had a lot more guns, with the New Zealand authorities to shut down a site called Mega Upload. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yes.
Mega Upload is a site where people can upload large files and then other people can download these large files. Now, what these files are, Mega Upload does not care. They don't have any interest what the files are one way or another. And true, lots and lots of those files are pirated. Lots and lots of those files are illegally copied and downloaded things. So they have arrested the guy who started the site, whose name is Kim something or other. I'm reading rather fast here on my screen. And this sort of thing that happened may or may not be legal, because the idea of the United States operating in New Zealand for, you know, prosecuting a foreign national who has never set foot in the United States, there's some hinkety international law concerns there. So much so that the hacktivist group Anonymous decided, oh, you want to take down Mega Upload? Okay, fair enough. And they took down the Department of Justice, the MPAA, the RIAA, and several other sites in retaliation.
Really?
So basically, let me put it this way. On complicated.com, complicated starts with a K, this weekend, right after Sunday Morning Live, there will be articles by 3 o'clock on our site with a host of links, including a link to the entire text of SOPA and PIPA that people can reference for themselves.
Okay.
Including links to this story. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So when people see news of that and something like that, you know, and we look at the proponent of SOPA, who this Representative Lamar Smith, who is mostly known for his anti-immigrant stances in recent years and is backed by the RIAA, which is well known for screwing lots of recording artists, the MPAA, which the Writers Guild of America went to enormous war with not just 3 years ago and is still not very happy with the terms that they got in terms of being compensated for online work and things of that sort, those sorts of residuals. When you have those guys on the other side of the table, they kind of look like the bad guys to the average person, and it's kind of hard to get over that, because these are also the people who sued a single mother for $22,000 a song when she didn't know that things were being uploaded from her computer, and they basically bankrupted her.
Wow.
As an quote-unquote example, you know. So these are the guys that you're on the side with. I mean, I appreciate where you're coming from. You're concerned about your own economic bottom line, Jackie, but these are the guys on your team. And if these are the guys on your team, you're not going to look too good to pretty much it's my wife phrases it this way. It's like it's hard to give a 99% argument when you're working with the 1%.
Yeah, and I totally agree with
Go,
you.
Michelle.
I'm speaking with other people who have that same issue with Hollywood. You know, Hollywood is not a single individual, but the whole Hollywood machine where they are putting content out there, I mean, very legitimately, and just not receiving the revenues from Hollywood. Yes, that does make it more difficult to push the issue that I'm trying to push.
Okay, so in the interest of time, can we at least address the one the part of it which a number of people have brought up, which is if I blog and I put a picture up there from somebody who's copyrighted or whatever, then through this PIPA or SOPA or whichever, in SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act, I just want you guys to know it's just, you know, the initials, and PIPA, what was it again, Hannibal?
Protect Intellectual Property Act.
So that's what PIPA is. So the point is, is it really that way, or are people just kind of getting, you know, knee-jerk reactions to it? Would I really be in danger of being shut down and fined and criminalized?
Well, as the law, I'm sorry, you want to go, Jackie?
No, because I have not read that. But what I have read from the Intellectual Property Rights Center is that Well, and it doesn't directly answer the question, but some people think that the content provider can shut down her site. They're saying absolutely not. Content provider cannot shut down anything. There's a process that has to go through first by a complaint being made. The content provider may work with the advertisers on that site and try to get them out of it, but they have to file a complaint to the properties in the property rights center. And then they will check it out once they find out that the site is set up specifically for illegal downloads. They have to go back to the courts to get a court order to shut it out. That sounds very, very time consuming to me, and that's what I've read.
I'll say something and then I'll give a concrete example there. The law as it is currently written says that if let's say a Cedric who has a website, Sunday Morning Live, let's say she links to, download.nz, a New Zealand site that happens to, I'll step even farther back from that, that she links to a perfectly innocuous site, mommies.com or something, that on their front page have a link to downloads.nz or even an ad that there was served through Google Ads or whatever, that provides illegal stuff. According to the laws as they are currently written, it is within the rights of the original property owner to file a complaint that would, without ever informing Isidra, that would take the IP address for her website, which is the unique address that allows people to reach it, and proliferate throughout the internet to shut down access to it. So her website's sitting there fine and dandy where she always thought it was, but if she tries to go to it from a browser anywhere in the world, it's dead. It's an internet death sentence. How is this unusual? Well, there was a case in 2010 where a website called dadjazz1.com had its domain seized and restored a year later without a single charge being filed. Everything was shut down. The financial wherewithal of these people who had started this site was completely not considered for an entire year while this paperwork was processed. Now, if the MPAA or a content provider like Sony Pictures or Warner Brothers wants to do that, sure, they can blow $300 an hour on their lawyer to run that play. Why not? However, if somebody like a Cedra or a small business person like that who relies upon their website in this new digital frontier for their livelihood has to wait a year for the paperwork to be processed without charges being filed and with no room for them to be compensated for unfair prosecution, that is frankly un-American, and that is what has to be stopped.
I agree with you. I just have not found the wording that says that that's what's in these documents. And I'm not saying that it's not. I'm just simply saying that I have not found it.
You'll find it Sunday on complicated.com.
I'm sorry?
You'll find it Sunday on complicated.com.
Okay, I intend to do it before then. But, yeah, well, thank you very much for letting me know that, and it really sounds like these acts need to be rewritten and very specifically targeting what they're after as opposed to being a far-reaching arm. And one thing that really, really confuses me here is that if it's supposed to be the government reaching into people's lives, the government is backing off of voting on this thing, and supporters of it are even backing out of it. That admittedly is confusing me. Why are you going to try something and then not get the support of it of your own people? And it could be designed to do that.
Well, I understand that a lot of people are upset with President Obama because he basically shelved the SOPA part of it. But I understand PIPA is very much alive. And on Tuesday, I guess we'll find out what is actually going to be voted on your site too, Hannibal. Or will you be talking about that, Jackie?
Well, no. Excuse me for cutting in here. I read an article today or late last night that the vote that was originally scheduled for the 24th has now been pushed back into February without a definite date on it.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, coming up next, we're going to talk to Bobby Martis. And why did you invite Bobby Martis, Jackie?
Bobby Martis is a filmmaker who has product that he has legitimately tried to distribute. He has a distributor distributing it, and I understand he's seen no money from the distribution in over a year. He has something that he'd like to talk about.
Because of maybe bootlegging or whatever?
No.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it. We'll let Bobby talk about it. And then you have Branford Bell, and you invited him because?
Because he works in the industry, and he has seen the attrition recently from loss of production at the production house that he works at, because the production just isn't there. He doesn't know when his number may come up.
Ah, okay. Well, that'll be after the break. Hannibal, as we say at Fine Farewell to You, it's been very interesting and enlightening listening to your point of view. What do you want to wrap up with that maybe we didn't get to that you think people need to know?
Perfectly. The one thing before you look at these anecdotal cases and looking at this evidence is factor in the fact that we are facing one of the hardest economies that this country has seen in decades, that unemployment is at all-time highs, and that hard times have come for everyone. And that has nothing to do with online piracy.
Hmm.
That the money that is gone, the money that has been outsourced overseas to India, to Suriname, to wherever else, is gone, not because of online piracy, but because the economy just stinks. And that's the way it is.
Okay, and the other thing is when radio came out, I think there were a lot of people upset with radio because it was airing over the air things that people used to have to buy. And so when you talk about evolve or die, well, radio did become to, you know, promote these Jackson 5s and others that became bigger than life because of radio. But as we say farewell, I'd like to wish you a happy birthday, which is why we can't talk to you live.
Thank you.
And I'm sure there are people who would like to call in. The live part starts now at 619-996-1674, 619-996-1674. And Hannibal, again, thank you so much. Happy birthday, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Thank you,
Hannibal. And once again, you present a hard case to argue.
I think he said he was a debate champion in college or high school or something.
You have no idea how I've been preparing for this nonstop. You have no idea. I had my little talking points together. I've been so amped for this. My wife has been like, you haven't paid a whit of attention to me. I'm like, I haven't paid attention to you.
Well, it's paid off.
It has, definitely. You sound totally prepared. Thanks again.
Fishermen control their net. Fighters control their web. Who, my friend, controls the World Wide Web? You're in. What spider has you in this website? Real, real tight. A click and a bite. Grab real, real tight.
This is Latavia Collins, and you're listening to Sunday Morning Live.
To David Ornette Sherry and Latavia Collins for letting us know where we are and reminding us about the dangers of the World Wide Web and the Internet Web that we're all caught up in. Jackie Penn, well, what do you think? It's time for us to bring in the live guests as promised, so why don't you go ahead and make your introductions?
Good morning. This is Jackie Penn. I'm co-hosting with Isidra Person Lynn on Sunday Morning Live, and thank you for joining us on this Super Bowl Monday. I have two guests waiting to speak with you on the subject that we've been discussing, and who do we have first, Isidra?
They're both with us.
Oh,
they're
okay. Well, who would like to go first? We had a brief introduction of both of them, Bobby Martis and Branford Bell. Branford Bell works in the industry behind the scenes as an editor. It's a mix engineer, and Bobby Martis is the filmmaker. Bobby, let's bring you in first, please.
Okay.
Good morning. Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning, Isidra, and good morning, Jackie Penn.
Good morning to you.
So Bobby, I've given
an introduction of you, but if you would give a brief introduction of yourself and state your position on the issue for our listeners, let's hear what you've experienced from your perspective as a filmmaker.
Sure. Well, let me just say that I'm a filmmaker, which that's just short for producer, director, writer, an independent world. And even though I'm in independent world, I'm still a member of the Directors Guild of America, the Writers Guild of America, After SAG, the whole nine. So my whole thing is to create film projects or content. I've also been in the music industry as well, and I'd like to also comment on some of the stuff that Hannibal had mentioned earlier. But let me just say what the problem is. The problem is, and just on a statistical basis, is that you know, we've made content, we meaning America or just filmmakers all over the world, we've made this content, and America has seen about $20 billion in loss of revenue. And just America alone, and about $200 million worldwide. Now, these numbers were dictated by Hollywood. So, and you also have to question everything that Hollywood says because of their own books and the way they like to phrase things. But those are the numbers, and obviously there's loss of jobs. Jackie, you were originally mentioning loss of jobs in Hollywood and why things have left. We've originally had they called it runaway production, which a lot of it went to Canada. But then since America had listed some of the tax incentives in various states like Michigan at 41%, that just means you get 41% of the structured budget that you spent there back in tax incentives. Other states like Georgia and Louisiana and a number of other states have given these tax incentives to keep production in America. And so for the producer, what that means is your dollar is elongated, so to speak, and you can do more in certain states. In just the great state of California, we don't have those great tax incentives, even though I think it's like 20%, something really low. But we do more production here. At one point we did more production here, but the producers have taken it elsewhere. Now we're talking about this piracy, and who's taking these things? Now, you know, 80% of all of our losses are done overseas. And, who's taking it? Now, we were talking about Hannibal was talking about some of the sites that have been up for, I don't know, like Mega Upload. They were talking about that site that was just attacked by the Justice Department. And there was $500 million in damages of copyright owners, and they were talking. And they actually sold $175 million in ads. So they're making the money, and their site is actually the conduit site. It's like they're there to, if you want to get a movie through a torrent site, and I don't know if people really know what torrent sites are. Basically, if you go to Google, not that I'm telling you how to do it, but if you go in and you say, I want to get, Mission Impossible, whatever, they'll send you to a torrent site. And that torrent site is just a site that links you up with somebody who has that content. And torrent just means a peer-to-peer, one location to the next location. So if I had, Mission Impossible or whatever film, I could then get it through, download it through whatever peer, whatever home you're in, and get it to my home. So it's actually you're sharing this footage. And what happens is that it goes from 700 megabytes to, 1.5 gigabytes, and so it's relatively a large file. So you need a site that could handle that big activity, and that's what sites like Mega Upload and Pirate Bay and BT Junkie and Mini Nova. That's what those sites do. It's not only movies, but it's also music. It's also software. And any kind of content. That's what those sites do. And to the actual producer of those content, what they're doing is they are actually losing out on the profitability of that. Now, I understand Hannibal's position of, we're giving you branding, or we're giving you notoriety, or we're exposing people to your awareness of who you are, and this, that, and the other. We're giving them the opportunity to know who you are, but you're also taking money away from them. Now, obviously, a producer has to diversify. Just like you have your the monies that you save. You want to diversify. You want to save a little bit here, a little bit there, this, that, and the other. And so, therefore, you get certain monies from various things, from theatricals, from all the ancillary markets, and this, that, and the other. But what you're doing is you're saying, listen, if I can get this content free over here, why would I want to even pay for it? And seeing that it's such a large issue right now, and Hannibal, it is right in terms of the economy. The economy is to the dogs right now. And so everyone is looking at, where can I save? Well, if I download this content, I'm actually saving this content. And there are people who say, well, you know, that's not messing with the economy, because the $10 to $15 that you are saving here, you're putting it in, you're going to the grocery store and spending that money there, or you're buying a car, you're doing various things. So you're still infusing that into the economy. But what you're not doing is infusing that into that particular person who has created that content. And please keep in mind that it's not like every filmmaker is working every day. You were just talking to an actor earlier, and that actor was a tow truck driver. And, I mean, he that was one of his jobs, was a tow truck driver. And his initial job, you know, every actor needs to have a job if they're not acting. And a lot of times you're not acting every single day. And as a matter of fact, there's SAGs, Screen Actors Guild statistics, that say only 3% of the actors make a living. So therefore, 97% of the actors have to do other things. So the minute you get that one job, you want to maximize on that one job as much as possible. Same thing with the filmmaker. Once you finally get the money, and getting the money is just as hard as actually it's harder than actually shooting the film. I'll say that again. Getting the money to shoot a film is actually harder than actually shooting the film. So once you get that money, you finally get that money, you want to maximize the income potential of that film in all of the markets. And I will say that it's not hard to make it's not easy to make money on a film. 60 to 70% of films out there, I'm talking about all films, are not profitable. 10% of the films, you just break even. So 20% of the films become profitable. Now, that's not a very attractive thing to an investor. And so who can be in that game other than a Sony, a Disney, a Warner Brothers, a Paramount, Fox, you know, the majors, Universal? Those are the people who can on a long-term basis be in that game. The independents, on the other hand, you know, we want to actually make films too, and we want to be able to make films that reflect us. And so there's a couple of other things I want to say on that, and I want to actually give you some facts and figures, but I don't want to dominate. So, Jackie, if you want to ask me another question, you can go ahead and ask me.
Yes, Bubby, you have product out there, and you related a story to me once where someone called you and told you that they saw someone selling your product on the street. What did you want them to do about?
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
can we talk about your product out there?
Exactly. Well, I mean, actually, I did a film called Midnight Blue, and there was a friend of mine. He was a friend, but he's also a sound guy. He went to an eatery in Los Angeles called M&M's. And he says, Bob, hey, man, there's somebody outside M&M's selling your movie. And what you want me to do? I was like, well, I mean, what can you do, but why don't you go over there and buy one? Because the bottom line is you can do nothing about that. Once it's in the mix of the piracy game, that's it. Some films are in the mix prior to it even being out there, and these are inside Hollywood people who are taking it in post-production facilities and mix facilities, who get these tapes. You know, you need to get tapes to send it to all the different areas for Foley, for ADR, for various things, and you get these copies. Some of them with time code on it that's out there prior to its release. You get people who sneak into the movies and they record it directly from the screen, and not the best quality projects, because you have to contend with people getting up and, you know, maybe you want some popcorn. You see all that on the screen. People put it on all kinds of autofocus where it goes out of focus, or that whole thing. So you're not getting the best quality. And so, you know, and once again, I want to relate to what Hannibal said. So what he was talking about is you're exposing the people to the project or the film or the music and this, that, and the other. So if you're exposing them, would that person, and this is a question, it could be rhetorical, but would that person want to then say, I saw this pirated copy, am I now going to go to the movie to see it and support that filmmaker, yes or no? The same thing with any film that's out there, yes or no, would I see it? Now, there's an economic situation that when you look at that, you say, all right, you know, you got a family of four, and if you're going to the ArcLight or somewhere and it's $13 to $15 to go see a movie, you know, at one point you looked at it, it's like, okay, well, that's like $50 right there, and then if there's popcorn at $4.50, and then there's if you want a soda at $2.50, and even if you go out to eat prior to or after, that whole day could be about $140, and then in this economy, who can spend about $140 on a regular outing, kind of, as opposed to staying at home for $20 and going to get your food and putting a DVD on and seeing it, or if you have downloaded it, seeing it for free. That's what we're having to contend with, is that kind of thing. But if you follow the money trail back to the filmmaker, is he or she going to get paid for you viewing that, yes or no? If it's downloaded, no. And so, and we're accountable. Everybody is accountable. If it's the filmmaker is accountable to his investors. If he does not give that money back to his investors, he will not be doing another film, because the investors, like, I did a bad investment. I gave this guy money. He did not get my money back, and therefore I'm shutting him off. That's the problem.
That's the voice of Bobby Martis. He's a filmmaker out of USC, and we have Jackie Penn, who produced this segment. Jackie, don't forget, we have one more guest we got to bring into the conversation. I'm sure he wanted to chime in at some point.
Okay, and Bob really covered a lot of ground and very good points there. On your clock, Isidro, how much time do we have left?
Let's just go ahead
and bring Brad in now. Brad is the person who works behind the scenes in editing. And Brad, can you tell us a little bit about what you do, what your experiences are, what you see happening in the places where you work and that you could attribute to this illegal content theft?
Good morning, everyone. Well, I'm a mix technician, which is a glorified name for a recordist. I work in the room with all the Macs, all the audio I/O, and when the mixers have trouble, hey, I lost this channel, I'll go in and try to suss out if there's any preference issues with the software, and I'm responsible for backing up the material and final distribution to the other facility that might marry it with picture or keep it in-house or whatnot. One thing I do notice, some of the studios I've seen, many of them have the same practice, is they will have a master tape that will go out, and they'll digitize a copy of the picture, which will have the time code, as previous mentioned, for Foley, for ADR, for other people to use. And these sometimes are little non-union houses that, you know, may pay their staff peanuts and no medical benefits, and they're sort of disgruntled, may not even really give a darn. My theory is this is where a lot of the leaked material is coming from, is these smaller post houses, the union shops. These are good jobs. People take it very serious. They're very responsible, and they don't want to jeopardize that.
Brad, is there any way that you know of that can be, that the houses themselves can be held accountable for the security of the content?
In some cases, they will watermark the picture, so it'll say who created it. And in other cases, it may have the sound supervisor's name on the screen, or it may have the post house that created it. That's one way to backtrack and see, okay, hey, it came from here, or you were responsible for this, how did this happen? That's one way to backtrack and find who the actual source was that leaked the material. In some cases, I've seen material on the net that had no time code, no watermarking, and was fairly pristine quality picture. So where does that come from? Does it come from where they do the Telecine, where they do the final coloring, those type of houses? It's hard to tell. I'm kind of on both sides of the fence with this because I think some of the studios themselves sometimes make bad choices. They want to save a buck so much, they'll cut corners, and in the long term, they get it comes and bites them in the butt. So it's pay now or pay later. As far as the piracy, the numbers were previously mentioned. Sometimes they are a bit inflated. Other times they're fairly accurate. However, keep in mind, these companies, these are just numbers. They don't care about people. They care about the numbers. So the numbers look bad. Oh, hey, guess what? You know, sales are down. We've got to lay some people off because it's all about the bottom line. And, you know, in some cases, bonuses. They want to make it look good. So I have associates that work in the DVD production aspect of it. That's where they compress the audio and marry it up to the final picture and then send it off to the client for mass duplication of DVD and Blu-ray, et cetera. A lot of those people are not working because DVD sales are down, so they have to cut back. And these are also union jobs that, you know, you can afford a house, take care of a family, excellent medical benefits. The music side of it, I actually run a music blog, and I don't like to see some of the information I'm hearing because I have record labels that will send me promos, and they use SendShare, things that are similar to Mega Uploads. These are legitimate promos that come from the record label, and many of these labels are smaller, so it's literally a DJ slash producer that has his own record label, and it's him and no one else. And they'll send me this material, and I'll post it, and I'll do a little write-up or maybe interview them, and then provide a link to their other material, such as what Mr. Taboo mentioned. And in many cases, people will go to iTunes and grab it or whatnot. And he made an interesting point of Evolve or Die. That's essentially what iTunes did because people were getting fed up when the record labels did away with the maxi singles and the EPs, like four songs, whatnot. So you have to go pay 15, 20 bucks, whatever, for 12 to 14 songs that are garbage when you just want one song. And that was the whole Napster thing. People were like, hey, I like that one single. I want that, but I can't buy that one single because they're forcing me to buy the entire CD. So iTunes came along. That was a game changer. People could buy that single, that one song, for 99 cents. And there's an old article. I don't remember. I tried to find it prior to this interview. But they interviewed people, and they said, yeah, I would buy the music if I could just get that one song I like and not have to be forced to buy 12, 14 crummy songs.
Okay. Well, good. And I could see where you would be on both sides of this issue, and I'm pretty sure many, many people are. And that's why I think that this legislation needs to be refined to specifically and specifically address what it is that they're after in giving the public the comfort of knowing that they're not trying to censor the internet and cut off people's access to legitimate information. I think that, you know, many people are on both sides of this issue. And thanks for offering those possible solutions to identifying where the leaks may be and possible ways of reducing that. I had no idea that those methods were out there, but I think all of it should be watermarked or identified somehow, as a dollar bill is with a serial number, to know where it came from. Bobby, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. With you and as an independent filmmaker, and you stated a lot of the things that you do, how has your treatment with Hollywood been in getting your content out there, and what, if anything, have they offered you in terms of security of it remaining secure?
Well, there's never a problem with content. You can get content out there, you know. And as far as what Hollywood has offered, this is where I'm on the fence too. Is we're not going to reinvent Hollywood. Hollywood is going to do what they want to do, but they actually have to be open to new forms of technology and new forms of doing business. When the music industry stopped looking at the artists and just saying it's all about money, it's all about recoupable, and we're going to make our this, that, and the other, Steve Jobs came in with that 99% deal changer so people could cherry-pick the music, and the only actually retailers out there, you know, like iTunes, Amazon, Walmart, Best Buy, Target, gas stations, but that has changed the industry. Now, right now, the motion picture television industry is facing another or a same kind of paradigm of a paradigm shift. Either you do films that reflect what the people want to see, also, and give it to them in such a cost-effective manner so that it's easier for them to swallow rather than going and spending $140, go out and this, that, and the other, or even the $30, $40 cost of a film, or even a $20 cost of a film. It has to be something that they can swallow because you have to look at where the economy is. Now, Isidro was just talking about Red Tails a little earlier. Now, why should an uplifting African-American film, when I say African-American, I understand that George Lucas has produced this and directed this. It's not really an African-American film in the sense that African-Americans are making most of the money. It's George Lucas. But then also George Lucas he went to the various studios to try to get this film done, but the studio says, we don't want to do that particular piece. And basically what they're saying is, I don't think people want to see an African-American film. So George Lucas had to put his own money up to make this happen. So what I'm saying is Hollywood has got to step back and say, listen, African-Americans support X amount of films, black films, white films, or mainstream, whatever. They support films, and they are very loyal customers. If we go to the store and buy Tide, we are always going to go to the store and buy Tide. Just think of when you go to the grocery store, what you buy, and what you buy most of the time. So you're very loyal once you jump on something. So if we're loyal customers and we jump in the car and go to Westwood or wherever, we have to then say, look, if we do this, you then have to do this to make things fair. If we're doing things in good faith, you then have to do things in good faith. So all I'm saying in that respect is Hollywood has to be fair to African-American content and support it, even with television. Most of the black shows are off, and it's like, wait a minute, but we're still going on and looking at various shows. UPN started with us. Fox started with us, our shows, and then they go away from that. WB started with us, and then they go away from that. So I'm just saying that if we're going to support, let's tell Hollywood that, listen, you guys have got to give us a fair share and give us a fair representation. If the demographics of – if we're representing the United States by 13.6% of the population is African-American. At least let us see 13.6 of the shows on television and the films that we see with that representation in mind. And then I'll also go on to say that when one is paid, that Hollywood accounting system is not the best accounting system for producers because, obviously the theaters get about 50% of the monies. And then it goes to the sub-distributors or distributors, and then obviously the distributors then have to take out their 30-35%, and then they have to take out the P&A. P&A is the prints and advertising, and then it trickles down to the production entity, and then it trickles down to the producer, and then ultimately the whoever funds the film. If it's the studios funding the film, they've taken it out already. If it's through a venture capital investor or some person who has given the filmmaker the money, then the money goes to them. But if that in person doesn't get their money back, that filmmaker, once again, is not going to see any more films funded through that particular person. So the problem is we then have to say, what is equitable? I'm actually going to associate this with the Occupy movement. And this is my association, is that the big wigs, the big wheels, the big establishments, establishments, from the B of A's to this, that, and the other, people are protesting because they are tired of the bigwigs taking the largest, not even the largest share, most of everything, and giving us whatever they end up giving us, which is basically nothing. And so this is not an American movement. This is a movement that's all over. And so if you are doing this to the little man, the little man wants to strike back at the big man. Now, in this situation, if the big man becomes the studios, that little man has no – you have to change – now you have to change his pathos and his moral and ethical standing as far as stealing content. Why would he stop stealing content? I'm a filmmaker who makes content, but I'm going to jump on the other side just for a second so I can understand why he's doing this to us. And stealing from us. It's like stealing a loaf of bread from me so I can't feed my kids. Of course, I don't have any kids, but if I had some kids, I wouldn't be able to feed them. But I'm just saying that if that person is stealing content, we have to figure out why he's doing that. If he is being wronged by the government, the bigwigs, even if it's in China, even if it's in wherever it is in the world, if the big establishment is not treating that person fairly, wherever he can get a one-up, that's where he's going to do it. If it's
a good point. This is Bobby Martis, who's making a very passionate point about piracy from both sides of the aisle. I don't know how you do that, Bobby, but you're listening to Sunday Morning Live, and we want you to call and talk to Bradford Bell, Bobby Martis, Jackie Penn at 619-996-1674, 619-996-1674. We know that Jackie has some information he'd like to bring, but we're going to go to a phone. Good morning. What's your name? What city are you calling from?
Am I on the air?
You are. Good morning. Welcome to Sunday Morning Live.
Hi, good morning. I would like to say that I'm a first-time listener, and I like your show.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jennifer.
Mm-hmm. And, do you have
and I want to say, yeah, who was the guy that said little man and big man? Someone just
That's
made
Bobby
that
Martin.
Comment.
That was Bobby Martin.
Yes, that was the film.
Well, I'm totally behind you in your comments. And, the big question is why is the guy stealing? You know, that's the question. Like, you know, why is the guy stealing the content, you know? Bobby, I don't know, are you white, black, Asian?
I'm black. I'm an African-American.
And you're in film school?
No. I'm a filmmaker. I've been a filmmaker for 30 years. Cedra just said USC because I went to USC, and that's where we met. So
yes.
that's okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I threw anybody off, but, yeah, he's a pro.
Oh, okay. Well, like I said, Bobby, I'm totally behind you know, you and the question why you asked why is he stealing the content? Because, you know, I was on, like I said, I'm a first-time listener, and I was on I was looking at the chat room, and someone had made the comments about Ned the Wino.
And, yes, I saw it.
Okay, and I agree with the fellow who made that comment because it's like, you know, we're not offering jobs to, like, the people who do the bootlegging, you know? I mean, that's why they're on every corner, like, selling red tails and stuff because, you know.
I think we should give
them, a part in the industry and you know, so they won't do that anymore. And that's,
I would venture to say this, is that the bootlegging does not happen on the – a lot of it happens if you're selling a DVD. If someone's purchasing a DVD, they may be doing it on the corner. But
yeah.
Downloading is 90% of China, just to let you know, China only spends 10% of purchasing it legitimately. 90% of the content – is stolen. In Russia, it's 79% stolen. Thailand, 79%. Hungary, 76%. Poland, 65%. Mexico, our neighbors, 61%. And it goes on and on and on. Now, once you look at it in aggregate, the whole world stealing content, you can't give the whole world jobs. So the only thing you can do is try to change the way they think and try to change their ethical and moral standards. Like I said, on the other side of the fence, how can we do that when they're always fighting the big man? And this is the one time they can say, I'm going to steal that movie. And I don't think they look at it in terms of I'm going to steal that movie. How they look at it in terms of is what movies do for people is give them an hour or 2 hour escape from reality. If their reality, if it's financially it's hard and this, that, and the other, and life's not going great, if for 2 hours you can escape and watch an action-adventure, you're going to do that. So it's really the movie industry is really a psychiatrist for the world. It helps them.
Can I say something? China owns the USA.
China may own the USA, but even if you own the Ford dealership, that doesn't mean you can go around to the grocery store and steal food from the groceries. I mean, just because you own something does not mean, what she means by owns the USA is China and India have been kind of supporting USA in a lot of ventures by purchasing various things, getting us out of debt and this, that, and the other. So that's what she means by owns USA. Now, even in the Hollywood accounting system, and I always have to bring it back to Hollywood because that's what I do, is that for a long time, Germany used to put money into movies. But then with the Hollywood accounting system, when they weren't getting that money back, Germany said, wait a minute, if it's not going to be fair, we don't have a real return on investment, we're going to stop giving you guys money. And that's what happened. Now China as well as India are supporting not only the film industry but a lot of other industries. They're purchasing land, they're purchasing buildings and all kinds of stuff. So I understand that. But just because you put money into a certain segment of economy does not mean that you should be able to steal from other people.
Bobby, if I may say, what kind of films do you make?
I make films and documentaries. I make narrative. I've done films for BET, Comedy Central. I've done from Showtime, across the board, a variety of different. You can go to my site, bobbymartis.com, and, you know, you can see.
And by the way, that's
I'm sorry, one other thing before I go. Like I said, I really enjoy the show. And, Bobby, I'm a filmmaker, too. Can you give me a job?
I tell you what, where are you?
Where are you?
I'm in L.A.
In L.A.? Okay.
Well, I tell you what, when I'm funded on my next film, you go to my site, bobbymartis.com, you send me your email and say we talked, and then we'll talk about it. But one can only help someone when they are funded in their next project.
Thank you so much for your call this morning. And anyone else who would like to join the conversation, 619-996-1674. This is normally a one-hour show. We wanted to give more time. We're over the 90, but I did make it for 2 hours. That's the one good thing about Internet radio that you can't do on terrestrial radios. You cannot extend the time. So we'll go ahead and let Jackie, you said you wanted to add something to the conversation.
Yeah, before I do, though, I want to see if Brad has anything more to offer in terms of what he's already heard or what he's prepared to say on his experience in terms of attrition at the production house and what he's hearing from people that have been able to maintain their jobs. Brad, please.
Oh, sure. One thing I would like to add is back on the issue with China. Some of the studios, what they've been experimenting with is releasing DVDs in China at cut rates, so like say $2-3 U.S. dollars, in an attempt to capture a higher percentage of that material that gets pirated there. Another trick some studios are doing, mostly with the major releases, is they'll do a day and day. They will release London, L.A., Tokyo, boom. They'll try to hit like around the same time. And that's an attempt to try to cut back on piracy. At least, okay, the film's not out digital yet. At least everyone, we can capture more of excitement of going out to see it at the premiere or that night. That's one thing. The young lady that mentioned jobs, she does bring up an interesting point. Our numbers as African-Americans in the post-production, production, at the various studios are small. There aren't a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are, you know, they're like I mentioned before, they're great jobs, they're union jobs. There's electricians, plumbers, carpenters. These are well-paying, good jobs, and our numbers aren't accurately reflected. It's often difficult to even get into the unions. Sometimes you have to be sponsored, you have to put in a certain amount of time, be it free or paid, get someone to write you a nice letter to get you in. So you have to be more or less kind of connected to actually get in. That's probably changing a little bit now, but when I got in, it was actually kind of difficult.
Are you a member of the union?
I'm a member of the Editors Guild, MPEG, Motion Pictures Editor Guild, Local 700.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, and I find that whenever we put on an event, all these union people come in and they don't look like us. And sometimes I'm just saying, you know, when you're trying to put on a black event, here come all these other guys, and that becomes a problem. Let me ask you this, Brad, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You're on the inside, and isn't some of the stealing, the access to the footage and all that, isn't that coming from within?
A lot of that, in my experience, they come encrypted. So if it's shuttled on a hard drive for any reason, like, say, a FireWire drive, mm-hmm. it's encrypted. And in most cases, if anything lives on the server, they try to avoid that whenever possible. You don't want it sitting on a server. And if it is on a server, it's inside only. So there's no outside access, period. And these are fairly large files, so it's you have to shuffle them around somehow. So unfortunately, you have to find some sort of mode of transport. But back on my non-union transfer house concept, these tapes, master tapes with fairly decent quality picture, are going to these places, and in turn they digitize them and then send them up to the clients wherever they need them. And those are where the leaks are coming from.
It has to be because they have time code, you know?
Yeah. And there's some... And in many cases, the tape itself may or may not have the time code. It gets generated as a software overlay.
Mm-hmm.
So that tape may not even have time code. So that might go out clean. Most of the union houses, once again, these are good jobs. People don't want to jeopardize that. They don't want to jeopardize their reputation. And they've been there for years. You know, you have to pretty much wait for someone to die to get to get the job there. So they don't want to jeopardize that.
Yeah, it seems like from what I'm hearing, and what I'm preaching is for people to take a personal responsibility to do the right thing. But it seems like Hollywood has a little bit of stepping up to do themselves, both in the way they treat the creators of the content as well as handling the content to keep it out of the hands of the people that are uploading it and making it available for free. So I wish that Hollywood was on this call with us, but maybe somehow we can get that message to Hollywood to let's work together, let's sit down at a table across the table from one another and have this discussion on how we can work together as opposed to continuing to accept what we have here. So I really appreciate everybody, their input and sharing that. Do we have any other callers that would like to chime in?
Let me check the switchboard, but not at this point. But go ahead and read that piece you said you wanted to share.
Okay. I have a document here that I got from attending an AFTRA seminar entitled Protect Your Money, Ensure Your Future, AFTRA Addresses Digital Theft, AFTRA, American Federation of Radio and Television Artists. And it doesn't cite directly where the document came from, but it seems to have come from the Intellectual Property Rights Coordination Center, a government agency. And I'm just going to pull one small paragraph on this one titled Stop Online Piracy, H.R. 3261, Rhetoric versus Reality. And here's the rhetoric on this short paragraph. Under H.R. 3261, sites can be taken down for minimal infringement or even a single link. Response, reality, false. The legislation treats foreign sites the same way U.S. sites are treated today under current law. It only allows the Attorney General to target sites that are engaged in criminal activity under U.S. law and that would be subject to seizure if they were in the United States. It makes no sense to treat foreign sites engaged in crime better than U.S. sites engaged in the same activity. And the document has a lot more information that most of my information came from. Now, I did visit the SOPA legislation. It's lengthy. It's 76 pages long of a lot of legal terms that I can understand how some people can be confused, because I think really the average person, being myself, I'm not a legal person, can be confused by the wording, because it does kind of confuse things, or I was getting confused in reading it, though it very specifically stated statements as the one that I just read, and you would think that everything should be okay for people not engaged specifically in infringement or illegal activity. But again,
but
I
Jackie,
think
can I,
that
can I, can
everybody
I
should
that?
Sit at a table and have the discussion and see who needs what and come with a solution to this big problem.
Is that Bobby Jackie, that wanted to interject?
Yeah, I just wanted to you know, you may see 70 pages of what you might consider as rhetoric, but, I mean, the Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protect Intellectual Property Act, basically, those are there's people who support and then people who oppose. The people who support are basically the creative community, the Universals, the Comcast, the Williams, the Walmart, the RIAA. These are the people who make the content. They support it. The people who oppose it, people like eBay, Facebook, Yahoo, Google, Twitter, they are opposed to censorship. And I understand why they're opposed to censorship. So there's two different sides of the coin. The people who make the content, who do not want that content stolen, and then the people who do not want you to impose any type of censorship, because what the Internet has given us is a voice. And so once you start censoring the voice, then it becomes a problem. We can't get our issues that relate to the African-American community out there as easily. If you do email blast and this, that, and the other websites that talk about our issue, and then you start to possibly censor it, that is a bad thing. On the other hand, if you make content, we don't want that. We want the profitability of that content. And just briefly, I want to just give that analogy of what happened to Prince when he came out with his music. I wish I was on the phone with Hannibal when this came out. But when Prince had a problem with Warner Brothers, and you may have all remember him changing his name to Symbol. One of the reasons why he did that is because he had a contract and he had to deliver X amount of albums in a certain amount of time. And so he says, look, I want out of this contract. And so he delivered all those albums. But then they said, I'm paraphrasing, is that, okay, but we still own your name for until this date. So then he just simply says, okay, well, I'm already branded. I could call myself Tree, Car, or whatever. So he named himself a Symbol. And so off of his website, he then says, okay, now I'm going to, since I've delivered the music, so that's not up to conjecture, that I've already adhered to that part of my contract, now I'm going to put music out the way I want to put music out. And he made more money on his website because that thing called recoupable that Hannibal was talking about is that you have to recoup in the end. Like if you in the studio and you have all kinds of things coming at you, like you have to pay for the bottles of Cristal that you may order, the this, that, and the other, it may be $100 a bottle of this, or the time may be $200 an hour, but you may be charged $400 an hour. You may charge all kind of crazy. So you cannot recoup unless you cannot make money unless you recoup. So he made more money selling directly to his own public than he did working for them. He didn't have to sell a million copies. He could sell 50,000 copies and still make more money. So I'm just saying that is why it's upon when we look at the artists starting their own websites and selling stuff directly to their constituents, their patrons. That is where things are going, and that is where the industry now has to step back and say, hey, look, if I can't go to Warner Brothers and sell my – obviously Warner Brothers can get to more people, get to more distributors and exhibitors and this, that, and the other in one big block. However, if I only need to sell it to X amount to be profitable, maybe I should do it the way I'm doing it in order to be profitable. Everyone wants to be branded because with branding comes awareness, recognizability. When recognizability comes marketability, and when marketability comes profitability. So branding eventually leads to profitability. Everyone has their number. Will Smith has his number. Robert Townsend has his number. Spike Lee has his number. Everybody has their number of what they are worth, and that's what the industry is willing to bear. If you're going to pay Chris Tucker $20 million to do a film, that's what Chris Tucker is worth. But if you don't know the word Bobby Martis or whatever, maybe Bobby Martis is worth a little less until he's branded like a Spike Lee, so to speak.
All right,
so
well, let's let that branding start right now with Bobby Martis. Everybody go on IMDb, look at all the things that he's done. It's a ton of stuff, Bobby, acting and filmmaking and producing and even writing. And so you can find out more about him there. We have Bradford Bell. We're wrapping up because we're like out of time, and I have one more thing I need to do. So why don't we just go ahead and in 30 seconds wrap up. We'll give Bradford Bell the floor.
Okay. One thing I do want to mention really quick is check your ticket stubs. When you go see Red Tail, double check your ticket stub. If it does not say Red Tail on that stub, you tell the theater. That means Red Tail is not getting that money.
Okay. That's a good point. And now we have everybody's website. What is yours?
Pegasus, like a flying horse, 303.com. It's a music blog, and I try to focus on electronic music from the black perspective.
Pegasus, Pegasus, right?
That's correct. 303.com,
and that's for Bradford Bell. And then Jackie, what about you?
I'm at Jackie.
Anyway, let me not assume we've heard the 30 seconds from Bobby. Go ahead, Bobby. Can you do it, 30 seconds?
I can do it. I know. I just feel like Bobby has a big mouth. I would say that you can go to BobbyMartis.com if you want to find out a little bit more about me, or just Google me and find a little bit about me. But I would love to come back on. At one point, I'm finishing up a film now called Black Male Endangered Species. It's about young black men shooting one another. And I want to address that issue and connect it with this film. So, anyway, there it is, and it's all related to everything.
Thank you. We would love to have you. Bobby Martis. Is it Bob Martis or BobbyMartis.com?
It's Bobby Martis, BobbyMartis.com.
Thank you so much. And Jackie Penn, thank you so much for doing this. Jackie worked hard on putting this together, and I'd like to thank you. And I think we did fine without all the other folks that you were trying to bring in. So let me go ahead and let you wrap up in your 30.
Well, thank you very much, and I really want to thank the listeners and the guests for participating and helping me to make this possible. Yes, this is not something that I do every day or even have done before. It took a lot of work to get it done, but it's very rewarding to know that we've gotten some information out there. Hopefully some people have been educated and can make a change and are more enlightened about the issues from all sides of the issue, because I did not want to present just one side, but wanted to see where the problem lies and how we could address it. And thank you very much for that. And again, I think it was very comforting and rewarding to co-host the show with you. And I look forward to carrying this issue on after the vote is made, whenever it is made, and give an update to the people.
Okay, now we found this in our research, and I have to share this with the audience. Bobby and Bradford, listen to this.
Done? What crazy things? We arrested people on every case. This is only our third mission. But we've made hundreds of arrests.
What? Arresting underage teens for illegally downloading pirated music?
We saved the music industry millions and apprehended one of the most notorious pirates in the country.
He was 15 years old!
That was Jackie Penn acting. I had to take that clip because I was like, of all the things for him to talk about, that was him, and that's on his YouTube channel if you would like to see it in action. So Jackie Penn, we have to remember, is an actor. Now, did you guys know, you've all seen this clip of the president. I want to share that before we go. The president singing, you've all seen that?
Yes.
Well, did you know where he was singing?
No.
Isn't that a trip? Because everybody always criticizes the president for not being down enough with his roots. He was singing at the Apollo. Let's listen to this extended clip.
Hello, Harlem. Ah, it is good to be here tonight. Thank you so much. I want to begin by just thanking Nye for the incredible introduction and being such a great mom. And we're so proud of her. Thank you. I want to thank our MC, Lin-Manuel Miranda. We appreciate you. I want to thank the incredible performers this evening. One of my favorites, India Ari, in the house. There she is. I love India. And then to know that Reverend Al Green was here. So in love with you. Those guys didn't think I would do it. I told you I was going to do it. And the Sandman did not come out. Don't worry, Rev. I cannot sing like you, but I didn't. I just wanted to show my appreciation.
Now, doesn't that make a difference to know where he was when he did that?
Exactly. Absolutely.
And backing
it
up. Pardon me?
I had no idea.
Yeah, you know, and so he had a fundraiser there. I think he raised something like $3.1 million. Now, I'm not sure if it was just at that one fundraiser, but they said $3.1 million in conjunction with that story. But I was going to just get the clip to play on the show today, and then I found out there's his whole speech is 36 minutes. If you go to SundayMorningLive.net, then you can hear the entire, you can watch the video, or just go to YouTube and look it up. But amazing to me how they just clipped, they went straight to the singing. But I think that was his Bill Clinton saxophone moment. You know, I think this is going to, because he sounded great. He really did. So anyway.
It makes a big difference, and I'm actually glad that you pirated that.
And you know.
Something far worth pirating.
Yeah, and you know, because it came from, anyway, you'll see on the SundayMorningLive.net. If you scroll down, it's probably toward the bottom of the page. By the way, there are also clips from Chronicle, Michael B. Jordan, who we heard from earlier. I don't know if you guys have seen the trailers for that movie, but it looks really interesting. So the clips are there, and then also there are some other things that I put there, links over to Jackie Penn's site, and I'm going to add these other ones that I just got, Pegasus303.com, which is Bradford's, as well as Jackie Penn and BobbyMartis.com. If they're not there already, I will add them at the end of the show. So thank you all for listening to us, and thank you, Bobby, Bradford, and Jackie for being with us, and thank you, Hannibal Taboo, because he was the starter fluid that got it going, and we really appreciate him. And happy birthday to him again as well. And his wife loves him so much. She told him to map out the whole weekend. That's why we didn't hear his report today. And thanks to Darlene Donlo. We'll hear from Dr. Quake Who next week. And so you guys have a great Sunday. And by the way, this is not Super Bowl Sunday, but it's coming up. So,
my apologies for that. I guess I'm not a big sports fan.
It's no problem. So you guys have a great Sunday, and hopefully we'll talk to you. And Bobby, anytime you want. You know, I am working on a piece for Willis Edwards. Willis Edwards is very ill in Veterans Hospital. Right now he looks great, but he wanted me to put his picture on Facebook to remind everybody he is struggling with cancer, HIV, and diabetes, but he's still here, and he needs some financial support. So if you guys need the address where it can go to, let me know, and I will give it to you because it's a home.
Okay.
Take care.
Oh,
and Bobby, I know you remember Willis from USC, right?
Oh, yes, I do. I know him very well.
And the industry. So you guys take good care, and we will talk to you all again very soon. If you want to leave a message for next week's show about what you heard today, you can always call my Skype line, which is 213-814-3511. And the first comment, my husband came in and patted me on the show and said, on the show, thank you very much, Dr. Kwaku. We'll talk to you again next week, you guys.
Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to Sunday Morning Live. We'll be back next week at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/Sunday Morning Live. If you missed any information that we announced, please visit our website at www.sundaymorninglive.net. And if you missed the show altogether, just stick around for a few minutes. It will be ready to play again in just a few moments. Thanks again for your support of Sunday Morning Live. I'm Isidra Person Lynn. The